And how did you decide upon prayer flags as part of the ritual that you're doing with the rivers?
Yeah, that's a great question. The last trip I was, you know, as I said before, I go back to Tibet as much as I can. That's because of this, actually, I gave up my American citizenship. You know, I already put my fingerprints, right? And the last minute I said, oh, I can't do it because I need to go back to Tibet. As much as I want, so I did not go through. So I'm still Chinese citizen, so that I can go back to Tibet. And the last time I went back there is 2009, and I was doing a film with Isaac Julian, a British Jamaican filmmaker, and he commissioned me to write the script for his film. And he actually used my poem as the title. It's called 10,000 Waves, which is about the illegal Chinese immigrants who drowned picking cockles in London. And so I wrote two poems for him, and the film became extremely successful. That's actually his best work. And he brought me to Shanghai to do for the opening, the premiere opening, and art gallery in Shanghai. And after that, I went to Tibet, and a friend of mine took me to really high mountain, so almost like 6,000 meters. And as I said before, all mountains are sacred to Tibetans. The higher, the more sacred. And there was this like huge, like hundreds, thousands of flags like strewn across mountains, tops, you know. And the air was so thin, and I had kind of like, I was gasping for air, and I had euphoria, right? And I was already doing a lot of like stories and poems about rivers. And at that moment, I realized I need to turn all the stories and poems and art and photography and sounds and music, somehow turn them into this kind of prayer flags form. And that's the seed. At that time, I had a task from my friend Sean Schmuder. He's a Minneapolis-based artist, photographer. He asked me to bring some kind of like a small flag banner, and just like about five or six artists, they each made a piece of work, and he just, you know, stapled them together. He wanted me to put them on the Great Wall, and I said, why don't I, let's make two small banners, and one I will put it at the mouth of the Yangtze River, the other I will somehow put them in Tibet. So as I was tying that little flag, those flags, you know, it's about five or six like artwork, and I thought, I want to expand this into like not just artists, but by all the people who love rivers, right? And I'll have their, like, I'll have them make flags and make at least 1,000, right? And at that time, I have no idea how I would do this, but this just vision came to me. And I said, I will make at least 1,000 flags from the Mississippi, and I bring it to Tibet. You know, it's also the tradition, if you put those prayer flags of, you know, are really people's wishes for, like, you know, get better, to get wealthy, or for peace, you know. And I said, why don't we, like, make flags for better rivers, for better air, you know, and better land, you know, and that's how it was born, you know.
You grew up on the Yangtze River at the mouth of it.
Yeah.
What kinds of experiences did you have with that river in your childhood?
Well, Shanghai is one of the most metropolitan cities. Growing up in Shanghai and also on the island fed in East China Sea, which is fed by the Yangtze River. You know, I'm the water girl, right? And but in Shanghai, the experience of the river is basically on the very famous Huangpu Jiang, the Bund, the Huangpu Bund. Have you been to Shanghai? That's where. Oh, okay. That's like a famous, like a little stretch of like a park, like well maintained, and all the Shanghai people will go there for dates actually at that time. And now it's mostly for tourists and for, you know, for the Chinese tourists and international tourists. But at that time, you know, Chinese like have no privacy. You know, the housing is so tight, so they will go to the Bund and have dates. So what I remember is all the lovers, they just like stacked like next to each other. You can't even put a needle between them, right? And when there's no place, they would sit on top of each other, you know, and having their dates and the love talks. And then my family moved to the island. My father was a Navy officer, and that's where. But that's also like grew up in town, right? And the only experience was really like when I traveled between Shanghai and the island on my father's ship, and I experienced a lot of sailing in the sea. And then I went to the countryside near the fishing village. That's when I really experienced, you know, the ocean and the water. And but I think, you know, I grew up smelling the salty, the ocean air, and eating the seafood. You know, the island is China's biggest fishing island. So just grew up with piles, mountains of fish and shrimp and crab, you know, and it's really cheap and fresh, you know. So it's in my blood.
It's interesting to hear from a non-U.S. native about the cultural differences between the people of the upper Mississippi watershed and the lower Mississippi. So
yes.
Maybe the difference between Minneapolis and New Orleans. What were your
experiences? Oh, well, I really love the South. And I guess where I grew up is also considered South, you know. And I love the Southern hot blood and their food. Their way, I just love their accents, and
I noticed that you speak English with a New York accent.
Oh, thank you. That's because I lived in New York for 13 years, but now I've been here for 14 years, and I think my blood is more like this Southern hot blood kind of type. You know, and also New York, like a big mouth, you know, into your face kind of, you know, personality. So sometimes I run into trouble here in the North or Midwest. You know, Minnesota nice, and I'm the opposite of Minnesota nice. I'm really nice by nature, but I'm also very, very, like, straightforward. And so that often doesn't go well with Minnesota nice, probably. You know, they think I'm just, you know.
I understand. I grew up in Chicago and I live in Seattle, and there is Seattle nice. So,
really?
And my mother was born in Cuba, so there's some hot blood on both sides of my family. So you can imagine. You know, speaking of heat, there was some heat generated regarding U.S.-China relations during the recent presidential election of 2012, when Mitt Romney said he was going to get tough with China on day one.
Yeah.
Of course, day one of his presidency never came.
Yeah.
But what kinds of feelings do you have when you hear this kind of rhetoric?
Well, I said, boy, you know, this is like the weapon race, the war race, you know. So the more it makes me more determined to use rivers, the water, the soft, but really strong, right? The water in Chinese is actually the strongest element in Chinese, like five elements. You know, it can break or penetrate everything. And as a chemical, as the water elements, it really is the most, the equal, so what's the word? I can't say
equivalent. The equivalent.
Yeah, equivalent, no, that's another word. That's another word. It just make everything equal.
Equalizer.
Equalizer, yeah, exactly. And it dissolves everything. And the most dissolving, the strongest dissolvent, right, in nature. And we are made of water 75 to 90% in our body, and our cells renew, like, you know, every month, every 3 months, every year, depends on the cells. So if you drink Mississippi water, after a year, you are totally Mississippi. Just think about that, right?
You're in need of a good cleaning after that, I would think.
That's right, yeah. So, you know.
It was said on Star Trek that human beings are ugly bags of mostly water.
Yeah, it is. We are water, you know. And you can't destroy water, and the water doesn't recognize any borders, any politicians, any walls. They just want to run free, you know. And it's just so poetic, you know, and so political. You know, and at the same time, and I really want to bring people together through water, right? And it really is just wherever I go, wherever I put out those river flags, you can just see the big smiles and the sparks in their eyes and their imagination just, you know, running high. You know, I had the youngest artist, 1 year old, who made the flag. The oldest artist is 93 years old. And we had politicians and core engineer people, and you know, the flags, you know, there were, and like the superintendent of National Park Service from Wisconsin made flags, you know, and also from Minnesota, and core engineer, like officials, you know, government agents, you know, they all made flags, and we had really famous artists and poets and writers, and I hope, Paul, you would make a flag for us. And
sure.
Yeah, and so it's just like people just start telling stories under the flags, and it's just really amazing. And a lot of miracles just happen, you know, with the flags, you know, along the flags.
I can imagine they're a very powerful prayer. You were talking about the desire of a river just to flow, to run free. And you've mentioned the Three Gorges Dam, a very large, the largest dam project in the world, very controversial. I've heard stories that it's actually affecting the rotation of the Earth because so much energy is trapped behind it. What was your experience with the Three Gorges Dam and your feeling of some of the villages that were obliterated by that project?
Yeah. Well, I was there 2006, a week before the dam, the Coffer Dam was about to be blasted off and the dam would be complete, right? And the water, once the Coffer Dam is gone, the water was just rushing. And I had a week to find some displaced people to interview. And the first 3 weeks, we couldn't find anyone. There are almost 2 million of them. They said they're everywhere. But when we asked the officials and asked people, they all shook their heads. We don't know. All the officials say, report to our office right away, now, who are you? Right? And I just hang on the phone right away, you know? And that's when I realized there are a lot of hidden stories. And so I started digging, and by miracle, like, I found an immigrant, a displaced person's son who works at a hotel as the bellboy. And we started talking, and he said, I will take you to my home, right? And his old home is already under the water. His parents were dispersed in different places looking for work. And he himself is finishing his high school, living by himself. And he was hoping to get into a Navy school to be trained as a soldier. And he took me to his home, and then he took us down to downstairs, kind of like grocery store, and to buy water. As soon as I uttered, do you know any displaced people, we were just immediately surrounded by hundreds, huge crowd, shouting and angry, you know. And then the old man just ran home and brought a petition to me saying, please bring the story to America. Tell us the story to the world. And the The boy was super nervous. He kept pulling me, said, let's go, let's go. And 90-year-old woman was just arrested yesterday by the cop, right? So finally, and I told him, you go, I'm waiting for the old man to bring me the petition. And then the taxi driver took us to another place, and I found this old man who lives in the last house. They call the nail, and he refused. All the entire village was just demolished, and his house was the last house standing. And the water is coming in 2 days, and he will go under, right? And but he refused to go. He said, I was born here, my four generations of my ancestors were here, and I don't have a place to go. So I'm going under the water. I'm going with the river. And we talked for about an hour. And as we were leaving, suddenly we were surrounded by cops. And I knew we were in trouble. So I just started, I started hiding my photos, and then we were pulled into the police station, and together with the old man we interviewed, and along with his daughter and his grandson, and all the other villagers. And before we were separated for the interrogation, he held my hand and said, don't be afraid. We have nothing to be afraid. And that just, and I thought, this man is about to lose everything, and he is telling me not to be afraid. And what can I fear? I really have nothing to fear, right? And so I came home. So, you know, the interview, we will hold for a whole day, you know, but I talked to the police, and in half an hour, we started singing in Russian songs together, you know. And my colleague was a Russian scholar, and they started singing the Russian song, the Goose Goose, you know, and laughing. And then he brought us lunch, right? And so through that story, I also said we all have water, we all have river in our blood running. You know, we do have a common base, humanity, through nature, you know. And we can transform destructive force, right? And this is what my mission for the Kingship River is, to transform the dark into light, to transform the destructive force into positive, to transform despair into hope, you know. And, you know, as my friend Jim Lanfasti said, you know, it seems like the world is in a hopeless stage, but we can't give up. And I said, that's right, we cannot give up. We have to keep working till, you know.
Have you followed the largest dam removal project in North America, maybe the world, on the Elwha River here in Washington State?
No. No,
two huge dams have come down, and
that's great.
That
news.
Was approved during the older Bush administration, and the funding was never provided until the younger Bush administration. And you can see this river coming back, Elwha River. They have videos that show the river in many photographs. Elwha River.
Could you please send me the link, and I post it on the Facebook? That's great news.
Absolutely. It's really a remarkable story.
Yeah.
What is your wish for each river?
To have more connections and cultural exchange, you know? And I really believe, like, water is our common blood. No matter how different we are, no matter what colors we are, right? And music, but river runs in all of us as blood, right? And just like, I just came back from paddling 350 river miles in the lower Mississippi from Arkansas to Vicksburg. And in the middle of on the seventh day at the landing, we met a fisherman from the Mississippi River. He was annoyed at his convenience in the beginning, But then I started talking to him, and he said, his name is Ralph. He said, and I told him about the Sister River dream, and he said, oh, I would love to go to Yangtze someday. The biggest catfish lives in the Yangtze River. I'd like to catch the biggest catfish. And the amazing thing is the next day, right, as we were paddling, we were going to paddle 43 river miles that day. And he caught up with us and gave us a beautiful catfish as a gift from the Mississippi. And we ate it, and it was just so delicious. This is the first time I had catfish, you know, just absolutely delicious, you know. And so I think, like, there's so much common things, you know, in food, music, poetry, you know, people's love for rivers. It's all our common ties. It's our kinship. It's our blood. You know, as long as people, like, it's in us, right? We just need to bring the flags and just bring the rivers to them as, you know, as the gifts to offer them, and they will know right away. As soon as, when I open the flags, I don't need to say a word. They just get it right away, you know. And people start singing, dancing, you know, and just doing art, writing poetry, drawing, you know. And also the neat thing is, every place I go, I will collect the leaves and make prints, you know, on the flags. And so those became like, the flags also became like living trees, you know, the traveling trees, you know, all the species of the local plants. And they're really beautiful. You know, nature is the best artist.
The website is kinshipofrivers.org. It's a real amazing project, very inspirational. And I wish you continued success with this project. Thanks once again.
Thank you.